Once upon a time, they say there was a miller who had a mill that was quite prosperous. But suddenly, for no reason that's ever been written, he became poor and his mill came to a stop. His only choice was to return to the forest, to the trees themselves, cut and haul wood to feed his wife and daughter. Now one day, when his clothes were quite threadbare, he was walking in the forest, dragging his axe solemnly behind him, when he ran into a strange kind of creature, a man with a green vest, a gold chain to his pocket watch, a man who said, "Why do you take trouble to cut down wood when I will give you riches if you will but promise me what is standing behind your mill?" The miller thought to himself, "That could only be my apple tree. Of course I would trade my simple apple tree for all the riches in the world." So he answered the strange man with a, "Yes, I will let you have it." Then the stranger smiled maliciously. "In 3 years, I will come again to claim what belongs to me." And after that, he disappeared back into the woods. Immediately as the miller began stepping on the path towards home, his shoes changed. Where they were worn and falling apart, heels began to form. Velvet replaced the old leather, and his wife came running towards him. "What has happened?" she cried. "All of the drawers in our house, they're bursting over with clothes and lace, and there's coins dripping from our coffers. What has happened, husband?" "A strange man who I met in the wood promised me great treasures if I would just give him what stood behind the mill." "Oh, no, no, not that," she said. "But it is merely an old apple tree, woman." "No, it is more than that," she said. "Right now, under the apple tree, our darling daughter is sweeping." Their daughter was as innocent and beautiful as she was obedient. And when her father told her that she was promised to this unknown man and had 3 years to prepare, she took the news quietly. But on the day when this wicked wizard came to claim her, she had bathed and dressed herself. She was clean as snow. She stood out back by the apple tree and drew a simple circle of white chalk and stood within it. The wizard made his appearance early, but he did not dare venture inside the white circle. Therefore, he could not get near her. "Take away every drop of water from her. Let her be dirty, unwashed. Otherwise, I cannot take her." The frightened miller did as he was told. But when the wizard came back the next morning, the girl's hands were as pure and clean as ever, for she had been weeping the whole night, and her tears rolled down her arms into her hands, which she clutched over her face. When the wizard saw her, he flew into a rage. "I cannot touch her, not with those hands. You must chop off your daughter's hands."
"How? But how can I cut off the hands of my own child?"
The father was in agony, but the strange man with the green vest said, "Unless you do this, I will take your life instead." When the miller went to his daughter, his heart was full of darkness. "Oh, my child,
Unless I cut off your two hands, the wizard will take me away with him. In my anguish, I have promised. Help me in my trouble and forgive me for the wicked deed I have promised to do. Oh, dear father, do with me what you will. I am your child. Therefore, the father placed his daughter's two hands on a table and cut them off. The next day, when the wizard came for the third time, the poor girl had wept so bitterly over the stumps at the end of her arms that they were clean as snow once again. And he was obliged to leave and lose all rights to the fair maiden. As soon as the wizard departed, the miller said, "My child, oh, I have obtained so much good from your conduct that for the rest of your life I shall hold you as precious and dear."
"I cannot stay with you, my father. I am not safe here. You must let me go with people who will give me the sympathy I need so much."
So the girl's mother bound her hands, and at sunrise, their daughter set off. For the whole day, she traveled without food, winding her way, losing herself in the forest. Until finally, in the darkest of night, she stumbled upon the next kingdom's royal gardens. And by the light of the moon, she saw beautiful fruit trees with luscious pears hanging from the branches. But there was a moat full of water protecting the royal gardens, and she could not pass. Her hunger grew as she gazed at the fruit just beyond her reach. "If only I were able to get some of that delicious fruit. I think I shall die unless I have something to eat very soon." She knelt down on the earth, began to pray for some kind of help to arrive, when suddenly a figure, luminously white, appeared, and suddenly the water in the channel dissolved, and the young maiden was able to pass on dry ground into the garden. The luminous white figure accompanied her, and when the maiden, without hands, reached her lips up towards the beautiful pears hanging from the royal garden's orchards, the branches themselves bowed down, so without hands, she could eat to her satisfaction the fruit on the trees. Hidden in the royal gardens, the handless maiden was being watched. The royal gardener was hiding and saw what he thought was an angel or a spirit or a ghost, and was too frightened to move or speak. After the handless maiden had satisfied her hunger, she crossed back over the moat and was accompanied by the white luminous spirit back into the forest. On the following morning, the king, to whom the gardens belonged, came out to look at his fruit trees, and when he reached the pear tree and counted the pears, he found one missing. At first he thought it might have fallen, but nothing was under the tree, so he went to the gardener and asked what had become of it. The gardener answered honestly, "Sir, there was a ghost in the garden last night, or maybe it was a spirit. It had no hands, and it ate off the pear tree with its mouth." "But how did it get across the moat?" asked the king. "And what became of it after eating the pear?" To this the gardener replied, "Someone came in first in snow-white robes, made a channel and stopped the flow of the water so that the ghost could walk through on dry ground. I was afraid to ask or call out." The king's imagination went wild, and he wanted to see this for himself. So he called his priest and his gardener to hide in the garden with him that night. And around midnight, the handless maiden crept out from the forest, her clothes dirty and torn, accompanied by a luminous angelic spirit. and the three men watched as she passed over the moat and entered into the orchard. And without picking any fruit, and the branches of the trees mercifully lowered themselves so she could suckle from their fruit. It was the priest who stepped forward first. "Art thou from heaven or earth, a spirit or a human?" The maiden answered, "I am no ghost. I am only a poor creature forsaken by my parents." Then it was the king who stepped nobly forward. "You may have been forsaken by your family, but I will be your friend. I will not forsake you." So the maiden was escorted to the king's castle, and she was so beautiful and modest that the king fell in love with her with all his heart. He even had silver hands made for her, and very soon they were married with great pomp and circumstance. After about a year, the newlyweds were separated, for the king had to go to battle. So he placed his wife under the good care of his mother, who promised to be very kind to him and write to him all that transpired with his new bride. Not long after the king had left the castle, the queen began to show signs that she was with child. In time, she bore a little son. So the king's mother wrote immediately to the king in the battlefield so he might know of his new family. The messenger went on horse with the royal letter in his bag, but after traveling a long, long while, he became sleepy. He found an enchanting brook to rest nearby and soon fell asleep. And while sleeping, out of the woods crept the wizard, who stole the letter from the sleeping messenger and replaced it with another, which read that the new queen bore a changeling, a child that was part dog and part child, a hideous and terrible birth. When the messenger awoke, he knew nothing of the change. He took the wizard's message to the king at the battlefront. Of course, the king was terribly distressed at the news. However, his reply to his mother was to take good care of his wife and child until his return. However, when the messenger rode back, he again grew sleepy on the long voyage and stopped at the same sleepy brook for a rest. At that time, the wicked wizard again crept out and exchanged messages. The message that arrived back to the queen was heartbreaking. It seemed as if the king wanted both the child and its mother destroyed. More than that, the king wanted proof that they were destroyed and ordered his mother to keep their tongues. The old queen was disturbed to the bone, and in her wild wisdom would let nothing like this happen. "I cannot kill you both. I must send you out for your own safety. You are safe here no longer, for my son has lost his mind in battle." She bound the boy to her mother's back, and they wept as they said goodbye, and the handless maiden once again left home. After walking for a short time or a very, very long time, the handless maiden reached the edge of the dense forest. But even though she recognized the forest, she was in a new place. Now she moved through the thicket and the branches. They tore at her clothes and her ankles. As the light began to dim in the forest, she fell to her knees again, smelling the sweet scent of soil. She asked silently for help. When she was able to raise her head again, she saw a light shining from a window in the distance, deep in the forest. She scrambled toward it and found a light shining
in a little cottage window, and above the door there was a small sign. It read, "Everyone who dwells here is safe." And then the door slowly swung open, and out of the cottage came a woman dressed in snowy garments. The handless maiden remained in the cottage for many years, and while she was there, she led a simple life. Even though she and her son were safe, she still groped with the stubs at the end of her arms until very slowly, over time, fingers began to sprout at the end of her arms. Not a woman's hands, but small, pink and tender fingers like of a child. She had to learn to use them all over again. Clumsy at first, as she dug in the dirt and learned to dress herself again. But as she continued to reach, caress her son, touch the leaves of trees, her fingers matured. Her hands began to grow back, and they were those of a woman. Meanwhile, the king's war had ended, and all the soldiers were sent home. When he returned to his castle, his mother shared the terrible news that she had sent his wife and child away for fear of their very lives. The king wept so bitterly that his mother realized that the messages must have been switched, that her dear son meant no danger to his wife and child. The queen showed her son the letters that she had received, and the king vowed to go to the ends of the earth to find them. "I will neither eat nor drink till I find my dear wife, even if I should die of hunger," he proclaimed. So the king left the castle, traveling over rocks and valleys, over highways and mountains, for 7 long years. But still, he had not found her, and he thought he would starve to death, and that maybe she had too. At last, he arrived at a small cottage with a sign over the door that read, "Everyone who dwells here is safe." And while he stood there, unable to really understand these words, the door slowly opened, and there stood a woman dressed in white. She took him by his weary hand and led him to a place where he could rest, and then gently covered his face with a cloth, where he fell into a deep, deep sleep. As the king slept, the door to his chambers swung open, and in trotted his son. The wind from the door blew the veil from the man's face, and he sat up, gazed at the cherub-faced little boy. Right behind him came the beautiful handless maiden, whom the king recognized and didn't at the same time. He knew her face, her lips, but at the end of her arms, he saw a woman's hands. Of course, she recognized her beloved as well and announced, "I am your wife, and this is your son." The king looked at her with surprise. "I recognize your face and your voice, but my wife had silver hands." The handless maiden reached into a trunk and pulled out the silver hands the king had made for her and shared that she had mercifully grown her hands back again. Then all at once, all was not lost. They embraced in full joy, and the king exclaimed, "A heavy stone has fallen from my heart." The maiden herself prepared a delicious meal for all of them, and they stayed for a time. But eventually, the king, his queen, and their child returned home to the castle, where his mother and the entire household received them with great joy. There was a second marriage feast that was whole and complete,
in a new way. Going forward, they reigned over their kingdom and queendom with kindness and gratitude for having survived an ordeal of mixed messages and the understanding of true sovereignty. And that, my friends, is how that story goes.